Is Red Bull finished? Are Ferrari pursuing the wrong driver for a long-term contract? Welcome to Tinfoil Helmets, your occasional spicy hot take roundup with all the latest Formula One rumors and the conspiracy theories to back them up. Everything here has been carefully researched for hours to make sure it's totally founded in logic, reasoning, truth, or not. Who knows? Today is a very special episode of this podcast as we have an American recording in Europe and a European recording in America. Hooray!
International collaboration brought to you live from Europe and America. That's it, right?
Yeah, something like that. It is very weird to be in the time zone I feel like Formula One is supposed to be viewed, instead of like the race starts at 6 a.m. The race started at 2 p.m. today. It was fabulous.
And did you watch it live?
I did from an art museum. I watched the first 20 laps from an art museum.
Did the art museum have it on a big screen?
No, I was watching it on my phone, VPN'd back to the United States, while I was sitting at a cafe having a cinnamon roll. It was lovely.
I find that very funny for no particularly good reason, but I love it.
Well, I don't have any European streaming apps, but I do have a VPN that's not sponsoring us, so they shall not be named. So I used it to say, oh, I'm going back to... Yes, streaming app, I am in the United States. Funny you should ask this.
Magic. The magic of technology. Let's just... You can be anywhere, anytime. It's teleportation for real.
Yes, without the dismemberment.
Exactly.
Well, let's move on to have we got anything right. Lewis is out in Q1. No, he was very much up there. George pulls out a P3 in the race. Man, that was like five corners away from being correct.
Well, I would like it noted that we had added that he exits the race in P3.
Oh.
That was my prediction.
Oh.
I added that. And I was right. Boom!
Do you have an alibi for where you were during this race? Because that's almost a Crashgate level prediction.
I was asleep recovering from my COVID boost shot, so I have a really good excuse.
You weren't just standing at turn 15 at Singapore with a red shell?
No, I wasn't. It was beautiful. We'll talk about that later, though, because I have lots of exciting feelings.
Perez wins, not even close.
Not even close. I was very surprised.
Lawson announced in F1 for the rest of the year, is Danny Moore needs more time to recover? Nope, but Liam did very well. We'll talk about that for sure.
He did very well.
Non-Red Bull winner, yes.
Success, good for you.
A legitimate crash gate? I'm going to go half a point on that one.
Yes, 100%.
And then a time limit race. And no, because we totally forgot that the track was being shortened. And that's why you come to this podcast, because we're up to date on everything.
We know all the details. We just forget half of them.
Yeah, the important half we remember. The track getting shortening, which I think maybe actually helped the race, because that third sector's always been a bit 90-degree corner, 90-degree corner, 90-degree corner, 90-degree corner. It might need DRS down that straight, but...
Did you hear the controversy?
No.
That all the drivers asked for DRS, and half the teams agreed, but a few teams vetoed it.
Ooh.
No names were supplied, but George Russell, in his position as the director of the Grand Prix Drivers Association, said, we all asked for DRS. We asked before the race, we asked during the weekend, but a team had said no, and that's why we didn't get it.
Well, maybe for next year it'll be on the cards.
Indeed. I think it was a much better loopy thing than it was last year. Much better.
So let's move on to some between race drama this week, presented by Dr. Helmut Marko. If you want in race drama, talk to Helmut Marko. He's gonna bring it all. So first off, in a 24-hour span after Monza, we had maybe the silliest F1 silly season of all silly seasons. Granted, it wasn't contract related, but within 24 hours, we had Charles Leclerc possibly representing Monaco at Eurovision. Update as of this weekend, Monaco will not be competing in the Eurovision contest, so we have no Charles Leclerc at Eurovision.
I see.
Nico Rosberg was listed as a source of saying that there's a Lando Norris switch upcoming. I think he said before the end of the season that Lando was going to switch somewhere for 2024, with the quote from Lando being, I owe McLaren a lot, but not my life.
I wonder how he feels after this weekend.
I mean, he still didn't get the win.
Nope.
And then Helmut said a lot of things.
A lot. And he was very good at digging a hole.
Yeah. What he called Checo South American. Just to fact check that on this podcast, Mexico is in North America. If you want to really go stretch it, you could call it Central America. Either way, that is not South America.
Yeah, Helmut continuing to be the suspect former member of a right-wing party from the country in which he is from, and continuing to live that life.
I think this was there was some very interesting commentary around the cost cap back in the middle of the summer of, you know, does Helmut Marko count against Red Bull Racing's cost cap? Because, you know, he's in their garage every weekend. You know, how can he be in the garage every weekend and not be an employee with all the access he has? And I thought if there was one smart thing that came out of all of this, Red Bull said nothing. And when asked about it, they said, why would we say anything? He is not a Red Bull Racing employee.
This is one of those things where, like, the conspiracy theory, our bread and butter, is absolutely spot on. This is absolutely perfect. It's beautiful. Everybody is pulling all the strings in the most appropriate way possible to show how this is a total do-over to enable Red Bull Racing to get away with something. But yet, I do have to question the fact that Red Bull didn't say anything. They didn't even leap to the defense of Perez. They just said nothing, which I think is all the more suspicious.
Yeah, but I think it's one of those things. If they said something, it was going to be more than if they didn't say anything. And I think almost by not saying anything, it might not be the most fun thing, but it was definitely maybe the right thing.
I think you're probably right. It is it's the Apple school of commenting on public commentary, which is actually you don't say anything. You don't even say no comment. You just don't say anything.
And if I can plug a YouTube channel, there's a New Zealand Formula One commentary or person, Josh Revel. He makes some great videos about kind of up-and-comers, you know, Formula 2 drivers, who these people are, racing people's history. He had a great one recently on Christian Horner and how Christian Horner kind of went from being race car driver to team principal, which was very interesting, and how his relationship with Dr. Helmut Marko got started. So for more background, you should go check out that video.
Interesting. I will have to watch that after this.
I did send it to you a while ago.
Yeah, but I'm a busy person.
That's true.
Some kind of excuse.
And speaking of the cost cap, everybody spent their money correctly, apparently.
I refuse to accept this. I absolutely refuse to accept that every single team was able to stay within the cost cap and behaved appropriately. Nobody was close. No, it was no description of like, oh, we had to have a conversation and fix it. And everybody was like, they just passed. Like, I refuse to accept that either A, they all legitimately passed under it, or B, nobody got caught doing something that they shouldn't have been doing, which makes me feel like it's rigged, because they realized after all the controversy last year, even if it was $100,000, they weren't going to say it because somebody would get annoyed about it being, you know, even $1 over, and so they decided to keep it quiet this year.
Yeah, maybe. I also do like that the opinion that they might have some creative accounting going on. You know, there's a lot of side projects that both Mercedes and Red Bull seeming to be doing all of a sudden, of like, oh, an Aston Martin with like the hypercar, and it's like, oh, are we working on a diffuser on this car to see how diffusers work on this car? Maybe. Does that have anything going to our Red Bull team? No.
This looks like it's part of a boat. It couldn't possibly be used in Formula One.
I mean, in that case, it would be on like the Haas, right?
Is the Haas a boat now?
Is it a race car?
Fair question.
Oh, the I guess the Alpha might be the better one. The Alpha is definitely the boat.
The Alpha is the anchor.
Oh, no kidding. And then some technical directives came out, which, I think we've said this before, but I'm going to go ahead and say it again. I hate mid-season technical directive changes. Just because somebody found a loophole in your rules doesn't mean you can change it mid-season. These were the rules everybody bought into for the season. If you want to change it, and I'm fully supporting change it between seasons. Don't change it in the middle of the season, because I think that just kind of sucks and messes with everybody's development plans.
I completely concur. It's ridiculous. It's like, I understand. There is also the subtle difference that sometimes they've clarified, but at the end of the day, a clarification is effectively an implicit rule change, even if it doesn't follow the same formal process. My take on this, though, is everybody's like, without wanting to preview our coverage of the race, but the Red Bull's performance, especially after qualifying, which is when I wrote this, everybody's like, oh, it's the technical directive, it's totally screwed up. A, Red Bull didn't use any new parts. They had a new floor, but they didn't use it. Two, if this actually requires new parts to be less flexy, there is very little you can do in that short space of time. And even if you were able to do it, you now have to go build a whole load of new parts, which means it impacts the cost cap. I refuse to accept that at this point in the season, that the reason Red Bull will have lost performance is because of this technical directive. I think it makes a great story, but I don't think that's what's caused it.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah, there's not much more to say about that. Other than I think technical directives in the middle of the season suck.
Yes.
Should we move on to our permanent occasional segment? Does Blank still have a job?
Yes, let's do that.
I think the only person we have to talk about this week is Lance Stroll. Because I don't know what was going on with the TV direction, or they just had the absolute like best delay on it, but they cut right to Lance Stroll, and then one corner, like the Lance Stroll onboard, and then one corner later, he's into the wall during quali. It was brilliant.
This is the directors making up for that mistake they made in Monaco in 2021, where they cut straight to Lance bouncing over a curb and we missed an overtake.
The one overtake of the race.
The one overtake. This is trying to make up for that because it was perfectly timed. Or did they know it was coming ahead of time?
So I actually did a little bit of research. I mean, as I always do for this podcast.
Exactly.
And I looked into what is Lance Stroll's contract. And the answer is, we really don't know what his contract length is. Nobody actually knows. I tried to check several places around, figure out if anybody had a reported contract length, and there is no news on what Lance Stroll's contract is. And I think it's one of these things of, you know, we can say what we want about Checo and the Red Bull, or, you know, Carlos Sainz and the Ferrari, but those guys have definitive contracts that we know where they're ending. I think it's safe to say, like, Lance could be out of a job sooner than later. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility we do not see Lance Stroll on the grid in 2024.
I certainly think that's plausible, and I think there are some interesting moves that could be triggered by that. But the thing that I thought was most interesting about this weekend's whoopsie, one, I still don't understand quite how he managed to lose it. You look at it and you're like, that's a bit weird. But also the fact that then he later on, as per the race today, ended up not partaking because he wasn't feeling great. Now, I feel that normally, like, we hear a lot from medical establishment who go check them out and say what it is. And so I'm very curious whether Lance has had a relapse in his hand or if he got final telling off from Daddy because you've cost us all the points, you've cost us all the coverage, and now you bent a car.
It is very rare to hear of an athlete at a professional level not taking part in their event because they're sore, which is what the word was this morning.
Yes.
And, you know, I am never going to be one of these people that says, well, they should play through anything. If Lance Stroll had a legitimate reason not to start the race today, I hope he's in better health for Japan and back on the grid.
Yes.
That being said, it's very, you know, I think Daniel would have been in the car with casts on his wrist if he could have been.
Yes.
And Lance was at the start of the season. So I'm wondering if also Lance is falling a bit out of love with Formula One because he's, in a sense, tired of just being kicked up and down the grid.
He's been shown up by his teammate for the first time in his career.
Yeah. And to be fair, like, Sebastian did not have a good year last year, but he wasn't beating Stroll by that. Like, it wasn't that close. Like, it wasn't what's happening this year. It was very interesting. And also, Sebastian was at Singapore, and he had this kind of, there was a lot of social media interviews with Brundle where he was like, you know, are you thinking of coming back to Formula One? He's like, well, I'm never going to say never. You know, we could have a Vettel Alonso pairing at Aston Martin next year.
That would be a great last few races of the season. I don't think Seb should come back next year, but I think it'd be a good way to put someone in the seat who knows the car and get them through the rest of the season. And, you know, there'd be good PR from it. It would be good for, even if he doesn't score the points, he'd give the marketing dollars because you got, you know, two former world champions. But I do I think it opens up the question who might take that next year. And I think I'm not sure who would, but all the people on the track, I think there's at least two names we can put in that hat. But we'll talk about those later.
I mean, we can, Dominic, this is a conspiracy theory laden podcast. We can put 19 names in that seat.
But we have to be plausible, Andrew. We have to be grounded in logic, reason, and truth.
That's fair. Okay. We talked a little bit about quality with Lance. The Red Bulls didn't look good by any stretch of the imagination.
They looked so bad. When Perez spun, he was not going quickly. He wasn't like he had didn't look like he'd loaded up a corner or something like that. He just goes into the corner and then like two-thirds of the way through, it's like Turkey 2020. He's just spinning around. It was very strange.
I will say, I think this Singapore is a very unique track to the calendar. And I think it's as impressive as Max's 10 run of victories are, like, you do need the tracks to align in such an order to where your car can be performant at all of them. And if, you know, Singapore was in the middle of that, his 10 streak, he might not have his 10 streak currently, because I'm not sure that Red Bull was ever going to perform well at Singapore.
Do you remember last year when the Merc was very peaky, but there was one place it was very bad at, and that was on street tracks, specifically street tracks that had big walls?
Yeah.
Now, early in the season, the Red Bull was quite dominant on the street tracks. We can clearly see that between Perez and Max winning all the races until now, right?
Sure, but I would say both Baku and Jeddah are very flowy compared to Singapore.
True. However, in the middle, was it Austria, I think it was? Red Bull brought an upgrade, and that upgrade was, like, brilliant. Who says that that upgrade continues to function well in those street-type circuit situations? And maybe it was never going to be great, but it was particularly bad because that upgrade has worked so well on real racetracks, permanent tracks, and in this case it has not. And it's very similar to the way that Merc, just the aero just didn't work. Like, higher density air, I think Martin was talking about how the fact that brakes get really hot, one of the reasons being that the walls on the track in Singapore kind of trap the heat so it doesn't get to blow away. I could totally see that being a big part of what's gone on with the Red Bull. And in qualifying, it looked better in the race. Not great in the race, but it looked so bad in qualifying.
I think it looked actually pretty decent in the race. The problem was just they were so out of position on quali, and they were both on a tire strategy that was good for what they needed to do, but bad for how the race played out.
True.
And I think, you know, as much as we love to see safety cars and stuff to bunch the field back up, you know, this is now twice this season where we've seen a safety car come right at the pit window, kind of moving into the race recap. You know, seeing the safety car come right at the pit window, and that just makes the race become crap. Because you've lost all your who's going to pit when? Is there going to be an overcut, undercut? Nope, we're all just going to go in now. It'll be great. Like, and it makes the most sense strategy-wise, but it just makes for a rather boring race.
Your pit strategy that you had planned is thrown into chaos. And maybe not chaos is not the right word, but any advantage because of that strategy that you had baked in is gone, and everybody effectively gets reset to a larger or lesser extent.
So the clear solution here is that you close the pits under safety cars.
I think that is both a fascinating idea and a brilliant idea.
It would be rather interesting. I would say, you know, unless you have damage that you need to come in and get repaired.
Wasn't that a rule that we had back in, like, at the very early in 2007, 2006, maybe, where they did close the close the pit lane during safety cars, and it caused these weird situations where somebody, and it might have been Kimi one time, they pitted right before the safety car happened, and so they were in the pit lane, and they were not allowed to exit the pit lane. I swear there was this weird situation that came up like that.
And then, like, Hamilton rear-ended him in Canada?
It was something very close to, I don't think it was quite that one, but it was pretty close to that. And you're just like, oh, that's a bit weird. But maybe with the current crop of cars and the current way that the tires behave, maybe there is something to be said there.
Yeah, I mean, we like safety cars because they introduce some level of chaos, essentially, by shuffling the pack back up, giving people a chance to have a cheap pit stop, things like that. But, you know, that could also be the same thing of, oh, you've just bunched everybody back up, and now, you know, all the front runners haven't built that gap out that they would love to for their safety car.
Mm-hmm. Before we formally move on to race recap, though, and I know we've kind of blurred into it, I did want to say Liam Lawson did a pretty good job in qualifying as well. Unexpectedly so.
Yeah, I understand why everybody's saying that he kicked, like, Max and Checo out, but, like, there were 9 other drivers that also helped contribute to kicking Max and Checo out of Q2.
Yeah, the fact that he made it to Q3 and they brought some upgrades, so maybe the car was doing better. And I thought Yuki did pretty well before his car went pop. But it's actually pretty good. And this is going to sound really bad, but it makes Nyck de Vries look even worse. And especially as Liam Lawson was passed over and sent to Japan to do Super Formula because Nyck got the seat instead. And it makes... Who was it who was pushing for Nyck? It was Marco bringing us all the... Sorry, Albon's appendix caused Helmut Marko to make some poor life choices, and now Christian Horner, I feel like maybe he has the upper hand, and maybe he can make some better driver choices.
Well, I have some other thoughts on that, but that's for later in the podcast.
Yeah. So, race recap, let's go straight into it after we've already started and we're coming back to it again.
Exactly.
Excellent.
First off, as much as I've loved watching the Red Bull dominance, and I'm very sad that they're not going to get the perfect 100% win record for the season, because if you're this far into it, you might as well be rooting for the absolute take.
Yeah,
that was quite a finish to that race. With the Red Bulls out, Formula One is really interesting.
You say that. This is going to come very strange for me, and I agree with the sentiment that you had. And credit to Sainz for doing actually a brilliant job with his car and playing the strategy. But through the whole race, you had this Ferrari goal/story that they were telling that was not about driving quicker, going faster, doing a good job. It was screwing everybody else, right? Like, there's this thing that I like about Formula One when it's at its best. Everybody is striving to be the best and be the fastest and do it. But the Ferrari strategy felt very much like, we know we can't be the fastest, so what we're going to do is we're going to make it suck for everybody else and drive around. And I'm not saying there aren't occasions for it, but it frustrated me that Ferrari didn't go, you know, we've got some pace, so let's get off down the road and build a 15-second win. They're just like, no, I'm just going to drive here and back everybody into everybody else so nobody else can pit, so screw you guys.
I mean, that's not a strategy that's been solely executed by Ferrari. A certain Daniel Ricciardo Monaco win, well, a little bit unintentional, does come to mind on that.
Best Monaco. That's always Monaco.
Right. But we've seen that before in some other races as well. And honestly, I don't agree. I don't think Ferrari had the pace. They've shown multiple times this year they have good one-lap pace and not good, 300 kilometers actual race pace. Because, you look at just one race week ago, Carlos Sainz was on pole and finished third because he got overtaken by two Red Bulls who were going well. I think Sainz was just... He was doing it all for Ferrari this weekend, the driving, the strategy. You close into the last, 5-10 laps, and, they showed the radio of, tell me my gap to Lando every lap. And that's all he cared about. And then it's like, oh, Lando now has DRS. Yep, I know. That was intentional. And he wasn't even going to let the Ferrari strategist tell him what to do. He's like, if I can just keep Lando in my DRS, I know Lando doesn't have the pace to overtake me. And then that means that the Mercedes don't have a free DRS pass to get around him, which means they can't then get around me. So, yeah, I mean, Sainz is doing everything.
It was a masterclass. Sainz's race was a masterclass in driving well and thinking about it properly. Credit to him. He drove a great race. He'd got it right. Love it. I want to see more of that. The problem is Ferrari and their story they told at the beginning, that's what annoyed me. That's what got me.
Here's a spicy take for you. I don't think Charles Leclerc is capable of that kind of drive that we just saw from Carlos Sainz.
I completely agree. Charles is still too immature.
I wouldn't say immature.
Okay.
I would say he is too romantic about the idea of Formula One.
Okay, I can subscribe to that. I can subscribe to that. Drive fast, go quick, do it.
Yeah, of like, this is how we win with art and beauty and elegance. We don't back the field up and drag Lando Norris along and things like that. No, we win on pace. We win by essence. We're driving the Ferrari. All those sorts of panache things of you have to win with grace and beauty, not by backing up the entire grid, preventing them from pitting.
This is the TV advert is where the sun rises early in the morning and the car is driving around the track and it's perfect and everybody is amazing. And after 15 minutes, they get out of the car and the beautiful people and they had such a great time and it's amazing versus the, I'm driving an EV and I need to go around this track as fast as possible. I'm going to do it in this very, very strange way, but it makes me win. It's those two polar opposites. I subscribe to that. I will completely buy into that.
It's what happens when you grow up on the French Riviera.
Exactly.
You know, it's you know, cruising through the hills in your Ferrari and yeah.
Which, you know, as you think about that, you think about the culture, right? Carlos Sainz was brought up with the influence of his father driving rally, which I think is a very different type of racing. It is driving quickly, but you are never expecting to drive in that beautiful, calm, you know, everything's amazing. Like, that's not how rally works. You are
right
out there. You are hanging it out. Everything is at risk. You've got to do all the different things. And I can totally see that difference imbibes that different approach to how you can pull off a marginal win.
Yeah. So that would be my take on Charles. And even back to the top of the podcast of, you know, is Carlos actually the right long-term driver for Ferrari, not Charles?
So based on Carlos's behavior against a competitor ex-teammate, the Carlando bromance, if you're Ferrari and you are like trying to like really make this work and solve many of your problems, do you let Leclerc go, pay a comically large amount of money to get Lando in a Ferrari, and you have the Carlando bromance, creating a synergistic, happy, well-to-do, competitive but collaborative team lineup, and you let Leclerc go drive the Aston Martin next to Fernando, and you solve all of the Ferrari's problems because everybody's in love with everybody and it's just super happy and jazzed? What if the reality is that the love-in that is McLaren is not because of Zak Brown and the team culture? What happens if it was a little seed that was planted by the Carlos and Lando love triangle?
Could have been. Did you see some of the Daniel Ricciardo news that came out from McLaren about just like how fundamentally broken as a driver he was coming out of that organization?
No. I heard Red Bull make some comments that he was really bad in the car when he got back in and he just needed to have himself built up again.
Yeah, there was some other stuff that came out. Essentially, he had fundamentally like forgotten his driving style. Like they essentially almost like beat it out of him. Like in a weird way of there somebody made a I saw a thing that it was essentially nobody's ever seen like somebody kind of forget how to drive a car, and he had forgotten how to drive a car. Like we commented like 2 weeks ago about him being like the last of the late breakers, and apparently he forgot how to brake. Like, and just trying to adapt to that McLaren and getting like pushed by, you know, everybody, the race engineers over there to like pick up these bad habits, essentially. Like that's really what cost him a lot of pace. And yeah, I'm not sure we see Lando and Carlos go back together, because, you know, I think they both would want to win a driver's title, and I think maybe that bromance gets a little heated when you have a title on the line.
But that's the thing. Ferrari is not at that step, and if they have 2+ years to get that, and 2+ years of building the team back up with two really good drivers who get along will give you 2 Ferrari constructor championships, even though they maybe weren't able to get the driver's championship because you've got Max stuck with Perez. You can't bring up the rear. The Mercedes is probably going to be equally broken next year, so you don't need to worry about them, right? Like you could see it that they get to it so that in that year 3 in 2026, when it's the new car, and of course they'll have nailed the regs because we all hope, and it's a Ferrari, it's nothing but hopium. Then you can deal with the driver problems, and then it's okay. That, you know, you can fall back into the Ferrari problems of, you know, who's the second driver and who's the first driver.
I'm honestly not sure Charles doesn't finish his career if he's let go by Ferrari. He goes and does something else, or drives like their WEC car or something, drives for them in WEC, because he's waxed poetic so much about like, he wants to be a Ferrari driver. He loves to be a Ferrari driver. He doesn't want to go anywhere that's not Ferrari. That I think if Ferrari like kicked him to another, traded him to another team or something, I don't know how well he would do with that.
I think it's unlikely, but I could absolutely see him being like, no Ferrari, no drive.
Yeah, I could see that as well. Coming back a little bit to the race, Mercedes had a hell of a strategy call there on the what was it, the Ocon safety car?
Yes.
Or a virtual safety car to come in, and then George just overdrove that car. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I mean, that's I think that is the canonical example for all of the concerns that you might have about George. He's still young, and I think that's what you see in a lot of young drivers, is they get to that point where they're in a car, something is within grip, right? The podium, the win, the pole, or whatever it is, and then they overdrive it. And to return to not go off about Ferrari again, but that's one of Charles's problems, right? He goes just a step too far, and I feel George was doing really good until he was right there at the very end, and he just bloop, wasn't thinking about it. And Lewis was like, no, I'm just gonna take my time. I'm gonna try and make this work. It's not worth me going crazy because a third place is better than anything else.
I think if they were in the other order, if it was Lewis leading George around, I think Lewis wins this race.
I'm not sure I believe he would win it, but I think he would have definitely got second.
I think if he got past one, he's getting past the other with how quickly they came past Charles and how much those tires looked dead at the end of those hards looked dead. But like he got up to the back of that group of four using a lot less tire than George did, because George was all over the place and Lewis had a couple looks that made you go, is he going to overtake him? Like there were just a couple looks there, and you know, if it was four more laps to go, he's on the radio going, you know, it's the Top Gun moment of, I can take the shot right here, move, fire or clear. Like, you know, get either pass or get out of the way, because you're not getting this done.
I mean, he'd started that. He was like, George needs to pick up the pace or get out of the way.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
And then George got out of the way. it wasn't quite the Top Gun flat spin, but he got out of the way.
As I watched that, because in the race when they played it, you were in a rear view from Norris, and you just saw Norris come around the corner, and then you just saw this blue stripe Merc just sparks and shot off, and I'm like, I thought he'd overcooked it in terms of didn't break and he'd locked up, but when I saw that replay after the podium interviews, oh boy, he whacked that so hard. That car was broken and straight into the wall. I would love to see what Lewis's reaction, because he was close enough that like when that car hit the wall, you'd have been like, is something bad about to happen? But he managed to hold on and didn't. He closed up the gap onto Norris pretty quickly, even though it was, what, third of a lap, half a lap left?
It was probably a high pucker factor, though.
Oh, yeah, there was definitely some, what's the phrase? Squeaky bum time.
Yeah. Did you hear the Max radio?
No.
Oh, it was who did George hit to send him into the barriers? It's like, he went in on his own. Oh, okay.
Max said that. Wow, you know, there's no love there.
Well, Max asked the question of like, he saw George in the barriers, and he's like, who did George collide with? And then GP was like, nope, he went in on his own. And Max was like, oh, okay.
No. It is out of character for George to not have gone into somebody else.
Yes. And do we know if he accepted responsibility for this at all?
I have not seen any coverage yet. I think he had. I think he didn't say, I made a mistake. It was like, I could have done better, which I think is slightly different, but there's a slight acceptance of failure there.
Oh, he's maturing. Maybe we should add a George account or self-accountability tracker to the podcast.
We should. I do think it behooves us to go follow up on some of the interviews to see whether he accepted the comment from Norris, which was Norris said, oh, I hit the wall and I think George just followed me too closely. And I'm waiting for George to be coming out and saying, well, I was just following Norris and he drove into the wall. It seems weird that I got it too. What did he do for it? It must have been him driving into the wall.
AWS Insights, -1 centimeter.
Exactly. 41 centimeters if your name is Nelson Piquet. Anyway, I would like to return to your point that you made at the very beginning of this, which was the Merc strat was really good. We're actually talking about Mercedes making a really good strategy call. And this is not just a strategy call they made in the race. This strategy call was set up by choices they made in qualifying, because they made sure they had one more set of medium tires, brand new medium tires, than everybody else. They were the only people with two sets of mediums before the race started. And I think that is really interesting when we talk about Mercedes' inability to make aggressive strategy calls, because that That was an aggressive strategy call, and ultimately it paid off. Yes, through a lot of luck, but surprisingly, I maybe they've learned. Maybe they're learning.
I'm not going to go that far to say that they've learned, because, like, at the end of the day, they gave up, I think, pretty much just one position, and they had a pretty good insight they were going to be able to get it back from Charles, just with, like, how good the pace was going to be and how much everybody's tires were going to fall off. And because there was such a gap to, who was it, Gasly, right behind, essentially...
It was Ocon at one point.
Anyway, the gap between that leading pack of five and whoever was in sixth was massive. So while we can sit here and say, oh, they made a genius call, like, it's like, well, we really don't have a, like, we pretty much know if we stay where we are what we're going to get, and we think if we roll the dice, we might be able to improve. So, you know, I don't think it was the boldest of strategy calls, but it was definitely, it was nice to see them go for it.
I think for me, the thing that makes it most interesting is not that they made the strat call when the VSC happened. Like, yes, I totally agree with your sentiment, but they planned for that optionality. Like, a big thing is having options on the table, and I think that was the play that they made in qualifying. That I think that's the more insightful strategy call that they made versus the one that they made in the race, which I think is probably a pretty slam dunk given where they were.
Yes, a safety car at Singapore. What a bold strategy choice.
Two safety cars, right? Oh, no, sorry, it was a VSC. It was one safety car, one VSC.
Sure, but still, it's like, I think there was a thing of, there's been a safety car every year since Singapore's been on the calendar. So, like, it's a great strategy for, it's a great vision from Mercedes to hold that medium tire back, and perhaps other drivers should have thought of that as well. But it's also like, well, yeah, if there's any track where we're going to possibly have one or more safety cars, it's Singapore, and we need to be prepared for this.
Yep. Anything else in the race recap? You've got one more item here.
Yeah. I'm a little concerned Yuki's going to be out of a drive in 2024.
What did happen to him? He said it was a puncture and in the beginning. And it's very weird for you to pull off and say, I'm not going to drive the car anymore if you've got a puncture.
I mean, maybe he's just getting ready to... maybe he needed to go source some fish for his restaurant he's going to be opening.
Maybe. I would be sad to see Yuki out, although I feel like he's likely to come back in 2025 in the Aston Martin when Honda put that in the new car in 20, or is it 2026? 2026 is when he'll come back, because that's when he'll get the new engine. Go spend a year in Super Formula, maybe he can have a redemption a bit like Liam Lawson.
But I think the pairing for AlphaTauri, or what, Hugo Boss Racing, I think is what it might be for next season. I think you could see Liam and Danny, and that would be a great pair.
I was thinking about this during the race, watching Liam's performance, because he did such a good job. Two races in a row now. Two. And I think he's probably going to get Japan as well, right?
Yes. Yeah, we know that.
I was thinking about what this really means, and to put my point earlier about where a driver's going to go when we fire Lance Stroll. I would not be shocked if Red Bull actually let Danny go, because they've got Liam Lawson, and... they let Danny go to Aston Martin to replace Lance Stroll. Because he's broken his hands now. Like, he's damaged goods from a racing perspective.
Well, somebody with a broken wrist but repaired by the same surgeon, is already not doing a good job driving that car. Maybe Lawrence doesn't want to take a risk on that.
Oh, good point. Good point. So I'm not sure about that. Apparently, Checo keeps saying he's contracted for 2024, but I thought today's performance by Checo was particularly crap, and I think it stood out to show how Max was able to make forward progress. Same car, same tires, same strategy. They pitted them both at the same time, blah, 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 blah. And why would you not put somebody else in the Red Bull? And there's always the slim chance, especially if Liam gets another race after Japan, that Red Bull does a Red Bull thing and puts Liam Lawson in the Red Bull next year and puts Danny in the AlphaTauri.
Yeah, despite that Red Bull being off the pace, Max is still really good at driving a car.
Shocking, isn't it? Truly shocking.
He almost got Charles at the end there for fourth.
I know, it was so close. He was closing, what, 2 seconds a lap? 3 seconds a lap?
If there had been DRS on that straight, it would have been gone.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's Max, for all his ills, is a really good driver. You can't say... it's solely because of the car, because if the car was doing it, Perez would not be stuck around way down in 11th or wherever he was.
Oh, I saw a great thing that I don't know who to credit on Twitter anymore, But it was, do you know what, I think it was, what Max Verstappen's boxing name would be?
Go on.
Jos Verstappen.
Oh, too close to the knuckle. Oh, too real.
Right. I saw another Jos going for Best Dad of the Year award, or of all time, I guess. Apparently, there was a time where he made him walk back from the racetrack, and somebody gave him a ride, and then Jos drove him back to the spot the guy picked him up from, and then made him walk the rest of the way.
I don't understand how you experience what Max experienced and turn out to be not a total bellend. I'm not sure I'm a fan of Max, but he actually seems to be like actually a very reasonable person off track. And I don't understand how you end up like that after basically being abused by your father.
Yeah, I think that's why I'm actually a fan of Max, is just because, like, he could be a total jerk. Like, you know, to some extent, what Nico Rosberg was a little bit in 2014, 15, and 16. Mm-hmm. And Max actually seems really pleasant to be around.
He does not seem entitled.
Yeah, maybe that was a little bit of some Daniel Ricciardo big brotherness in his first couple years at Red Bull.
Maybe.
And that'd be the one thing, if I'm not sure Red Bull would let Danny go, because I think Danny can play a great mentor role in that team if he's okay being in that mentor role.
If he's accepting he's not fighting for the championship, he's playing, he's the assistant for whichever of the two teams he's in.
Right, because if we know one thing about Red Bull, it's that Australian wingmen do really well.
They do. They do. They do. That's the highest peak they can reach.
Yes. Should we move on to any sort of takes and rumors?
Let's do some spicy takes and some spicy rumors.
I am not uncertain that Helmut Marko will be out of a job very soon. Or honestly, with how much his role is tied to Red Bull, I would say that his responsibilities will be greatly diminished. I'm not sure they're going to go so far as to fire him, but he said a lot of bad stuff in the press recently that did not play well. His buddy who ran the energy drink company sadly passed away last year, and I don't think he has much in the way of protection like he once did.
Do you also recall, was it last season or was it the season before, one of the trackside engineers for either Max or Checo was taking a step back from day-to-day trackside responsibilities to work on the young driver program for Red Bull?
Yep.
And so I could easily see this being a multi-year thing. With your points about cost cap, I could see Helmut Marko stepping back into Helmut Marko. He's however old he is now, has decided that, you know, he wants to spend less time traveling, and he will appear at many fewer races, and he slowly but surely disappears into the ether, into the cold dark night, they say.
I don't think that'll be his decision. I think it'll be, hey, you're appearing at a lot less races. Hey, your roles are, yeah, but they will PR spin it in a way of, we are all still one big happy family, however, and we are sad that Helmut will not be at the races as much. We will miss him, but please, dear God, don't show up. You are not invited.
I completely agree.
We didn't play the fun game of who will take Lance's seat in the Aston Martin. We said we had two.
Charles.
Ooh, see, I could also go Sainz, because...
No. Of the beer thing?
The beer thing, yeah, the sponsorship. Yeah, but I could go Sainz because I don't think Ferrari is actually going to say that Sainz is their number one driver, for the same reason that they also believe in the romanticism of racing down the French Riviera, and Charles and them match it perfectly in that sense.
If it was still Binotto, I would agree with that. But because they've got Fred Vasseur, who I don't think is as wedded to the romantic sun-drenched Mediterranean mountain roads, I think there's a definite possibility that that could actually happen, that they decide that Sainz is number one, they cut Charles loose, and then Charles ends up in the Aston Martin. But for me, the other two people to replace Lance are either Liam or Liam or Daniel Ricciardo.
Could see that. I could have seen Lewis before this weekend, but I think the more we have got past the zero side pod, where Lewis was like, I told them this was the wrong direction, and we see Lewis totally driving this car very well, not making the mistakes that Russell has. You had a comment earlier in the podcast that the Mercedes is still going to be crap next year, and I'm not convinced of that, because I think I think there was a little bit of like doubt, or George trying to take over from Lewis, or a little bit too much reliance on CFD or CFD wind tunnel data, things like that. But I think in the last 6 months we've seen like, oh no, we should trust this Lewis guy, he's pretty good. And I don't see Lewis leaving Mercedes at this point in time. If anything, we could see like some sort of weird triangle of like Lando going to Aston and Lewis going back to McLaren to round out his career.
Lando to Ferrari, Charles to Aston Martin, somebody random into the McLaren for no apparently good reason.
Mika Häkkinen ending his sabbatical.
There you go. Followed by George Russell going to McLaren when he fails to perform next year and becomes the next Jensen Button.
Daniel Ricciardo in at Mercedes.
Oh, that would be really interesting, actually.
That would be really good.
That would be the ultimate in Toto is the dad of the paddock, because he doesn't hold a grudge against anybody at any point, and it's just like, sure, come in, drive my car for me.
I want to see shirts that are the Austrian and the Australian.
I will subscribe and buy that t-shirt the moment it's on sale on the Mercedes website.
All right, Mercedes, make it happen, because we want to buy that t-shirt. Japan?
Yes, I don't have any spicy hot takes or crazy rumors, so.
So Red Bull need to outscore Mercedes by 1 point to wrap up the Constructors' Championship. So congrats, Red Bull, on your 2023 World Constructors' Championship.
So we are firmly subscribing, collectively, and I think I'm in agreement here, that the Red Bull was having an off weekend on this track, and that at Japan, a absolutely classic race car track, that the Red Bull will be back in full form, driving like a rocket ship.
I mean, Red Bull said that the Max Verstappen podcast is only going to take a 1 week break, so I imagine it'll be back. Which, hats off to Red Bull social media for making that joke about how the podcast will not be taking place due to technical difficulties. That was fantastic.
I did not see this. They're cancelling a podcast because Max is in a cranky mood.
Well, no, so the joke has been that the driver cooldown room has been the Max Verstappen podcast this year.
I see. I had missed this. I did not know this was a thing.
Yes, this was the running joke of this is the Max Verstappen podcast, because if you go back and watch all the cooldown rooms, he's, you know, asking drivers conversations like, oh, what did you do on this strategy? How did this stint go for you? You know, asking them about incidents on the screen that pop up. So it's been the Max Verstappen podcast because he's just been fucking off into the distance and like riding his own race. So then you end up back at here where he had a bad qualifying. He qualified 11th. It didn't look like he was going to make the podium. So Red Bull put out a thing of, due to technical difficulties, the Max Verstappen podcast will not be taking place this week.
Beautiful. I love that. That's pretty good. That social media manager should get the appropriate extra craze of Red Bull.
Right. So I will say on top of that, we'll have the Max Verstappen podcast will be back in full swing.
I will subscribe to that. I'm trying to think what predictions I have for Japan. I think George is again going to out-qualify Lewis, and I think he'll be ahead on the track because of that. But then George is going to be pushing really hard again at some point and then bin it, because it seems to be that's what he's doing recently, is binning it when it really matters the most. But I don't think Lewis will be on the podium. It all really does hinge on the performance of the McLaren and the performance of the Ferrari. To refer to the McLaren, they brought big upgrades for Lando and it seems to have worked. I hope they continue to work. I do worry about the cost cap.
Piastri did get caught out a little bit in the Lance Stroll crash, because like people were really improving on that last run and he hadn't crossed the line yet. So we'll see.
And he didn't have the new car. Only Lando had the new car.
Right. Yes, but I'm saying like we might not know the true performance because I don't think we got a representative running from Oscar.
I see. It's not clear how much faster the new car is than the old car.
Right. It's Japan, so we're going to have amazing hats.
I hope they release some special hats for me to buy for my collection. That would be great.
Have you thought of like commissioning a hat from some Japanese F1 fan?
I should consider that. If any are any Japanese F1 fans that you know or are listening to this podcast, please write into me and I will help in working out how we can commission a special baseball hat.
Yeah, I mean, after all, do they have Etsy in Japan? I should imagine they have Etsy in Japan.
They must have. If it doesn't matter, we can have Etsy in America and send it to Japan.
That's true. That's all I got.
That's all I got. I think it's just going to be a race. It's going to be a good race because it's Japan and Japan is always fun. But I think it's just going to be a race.
Hold on, I'm looking up the weather.
Oh, yeah, I was about to say, what about the weather?
It's been that kind of... I have to remember where the track is. Looks like we have a...
I can never remember where it is.
I believe it's in Suzuka.
Yes, but I have no idea where that is. Is that Tokyo? Is that Yokohama? Is that north, south?
It's on one of the main four islands.
Helpful. Narrows it down.
It's just to the east of Kyoto.
Okay.
My Japanese geography is not that great. It looks like Friday might be wet and Saturday and Sunday look dry, which is the best combination of days. Cloudy with brief rain, so it shouldn't be that bad.
I like it. I'm just checking where. Oh, yeah, it's in the very south of Japan. Okay. Or mid part of Japan. Got it. Great. Halfway between Nagoya and Kyoto. So that's been another exciting week of the greatest Formula One season we have ever seen, with the spiciest happenings and the spiciest takes. We're waiting for your feedback. Write into feedback at Tinfoil Helmets and let us know about your conspiracy theories, your feedback, and your wants. Remember to tell your friends to like, listen, rate, and subscribe. Peace.
Later.